Operator here. Welcome to the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. In just a second, we're going to connect you to the cyberspace. So hold on to your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye.
Hello and welcome. You've reached the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast with your host, Alex, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. Today we're joined by Sarah Jensen, a Canadian fiction writer, science fiction enthusiast, and literary advocate. She lives in Saskatchewan, Canada, with her husband, three children, and four cats. When she's not writing, she can be found trying to avoid mosquitoes, sunburn, and her frostbite in the great outdoors, while waiting somewhat impatiently, apparently, for the singularity. She is also the author of the new Cyber Noir thriller series, Bubbles in Space. She's just published book 4 of 5 of the series, and you can catch them all on Amazon. All right. Thanks, Sarah, for coming on. Nice to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, let's just jump right into it. So here at Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, I like to try to get into what makes something cyberpunk. So let me ask you the question I ask all of our guests. What is your definition of cyberpunk?
I think it's a tricky one because everybody's got lots of opinions about this. But I think for me, what it boils down to is a dystopian science fiction story where technology is both a tool of oppression and one of rebellion. And it kind of looks at both sides of the coin, the people, the haves and the haves not, the have-nots, I guess. So that's kind of the most important and most interesting part about it to me.
Okay, so advanced technology then, giving the two sides there, the being able to rebel, but also being able to repress the masses. So kind of this dystopian kind of society, it sounds like you're saying. Yeah. Can you also describe to me a bit of the aesthetic that you might see?
Well, I mean, I guess it's almost become a cliche now, the neon lights and rainy nights and the high-tech, low life. You've got holograms and cybernetic enhancements and you know, sex and drugs and all that kind of stuff. But it's always kind of the appeal of the aesthetic to me, I think, is about the dichotomy of, you know, light versus dark and this like artificial light in the darkness, which is something that I quite like. So
interesting, artificial light in the darkness. I never really thought about that. Yeah, definitely. And I like that you say sex and drugs, because sometimes I feel like a lot of cyberpunk isn't as punk focused, and definitely some of the things that I like feels to be more like action focused or just technology focused. But there is definitely, you know, the sex and the drugs lends itself to this kind of active rebellion of the body, rebellion
for
of
sure.
the mind,
the counterculture.
That's right. And, we were able to see that very well in Neuromancer. So that's definitely true. So how did you get into this genre of cyberpunk? Is it a relatively new thing? Did you fall into it? Or have you always known about it since you were a child?
You know, I kind of came at it laterally, I guess, because I've always had a very strong love of noir and the old hard-boiled detective fiction from like the 1930s. And something that I really, really liked was when pulp sci-fi writers started adopting some of those noir tropes, and I feel that that cyberpunk in particular really is a good vehicle for a lot of those noir tropes and stylings and that kind of thing in a kind of modern way. And I started, I guess, with some of the older like pulp sci-fi. We've got like Larry Niven has Gil the Arm Hamilton in his Flatlander stories, which isn't really cyberpunk, but it's kind of getting close. And you've got Asimov's robot series, of course, Philip K. Dick and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. And that's really where I started. But I didn't realize at the time that that was cyberpunk. I think cyberpunk was a word I was aware of, but I hadn't really started thinking about it actively, until I read this little indie book that was a cyberpunk detective story by a guy named C.S. Boyack. And he writes just for the fun of it. He makes his own covers, and I met him through blogging, and I read this book and I just fell in love with it. And then I started kind of doing a deep dive on cyberpunk, and I realized that, you know, I'd already consumed a lot of cyberpunk media without really knowing it. The Matrix, of course, and Blade Runner, and the old video games like Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and that kind of thing. I wasn't really cognizant of it, I don't think, until I started thinking about writing my own series. But it's something that has been, you know, a part of my life as a sci-fi fan for decades.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that. One of the reasons why I wanted to ask is because our previous guest, Elias Hurst, who you may have worked with for Cyberpunk Day, we'll be getting to that later, he told me that he only found out about it because he wrote a book that so closely resembled cyberpunk that his publisher, or like as he was trying to sell it, they told him, you should label this as a cyberpunk book. And he said, what's that? And he kind of learned what it was. And so he'd already loved, like you said, he'd already loved all these things, and they were in the cyberpunk genre, but he didn't realize that that was something until writing it. So I'm glad that you at least knew about it before you wrote it. So is this a relatively new thing? Like, so let's see, you wrote the first one. When did you write the first, your first book, which I guess would be...
This entire series has come out this year. My first, Tropical Punch, the first book in the series, came out March 31st. And shortly after I published a prequel novella called... I'm doing kind of a side series that I'll get more books out next year, of more traditional, like, noir detective fiction, but also with the same Bubbles Marlowe as the main character. And I did the prequel novella... to the Bubbles in Space series. It's called Dames for Hire. And that came out shortly after book one. And then book two came out at the end of May, book three at the beginning of August, and then book four just came out on October 11th. And book five should be out in mid-December. So
if I understand this correctly, you have written six books in 2021, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, plus some short stories for anthologies.
Well, that's amazing. I'm so glad that you're able to be so productive and active. And I also want to say that I was able to read Bubbles in Space, Tropical Punch. You know, you sent me the first book to review, and I really enjoyed it. I'll be getting to that later. But one thing that I really thought was interesting is that you're one of the first books that I've read where it was a female writer with a female character lead. And so I really liked that because, yeah, I mean, I have nothing against reading male leads or male writers. I mean, I'm a male reviewer myself and hope to be able to write a cyberpunk book myself one day. But it's just so refreshing to see a different perspective. And I thought Marlowe was a very interesting character. I mean, complex enough. I'd have to read the other books to find out, but I'm just really glad that there's different. I think it's so important to have as much diversity as possible in the content, in our cyberpunk content, and because it's present in the stories. I mean, you have Altered Carbon, where an Asian adult slips into the body of a white male, and then he works with someone else who was was it, a black woman who jumps into the body of a Russian mobster, you know, something like this. Like,
it's
just completely different. Like, gender is fluid and characters are fluid and there's no really ethnicity. And so in a futuristic cyberpunk society, it's good to have all these stories told from all these different kinds of perspectives of different backgrounds. And so that's why I really enjoyed your background and your perspective.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't, that was never like a conscious choice really to write a female main character. Most of the time I write as a woman, and that's just one of the easier perspectives for me to get into, obviously. But I did consciously flip a lot of those tropes, like particularly because I was coming at it from the noir angle, and obviously the old 1930s detectives were all these, you know, these gritty, old, downtrodden men, you know, steeped in whiskey and sadness. And there's this kind of, you know, there's this feel to noir fiction that I kind of wanted to, like, I love it. I've read, you know, everything that Raymond Chandler's ever put out and Dashiell Hammett. And that's a lot of the fiction that really has shaped me as a writer, particularly just in that really kind of sparse style. And the fun with, you know, simile and metaphor that Chandler gets into. And that was something that I wanted to play with, but it's not something that I personally identify with a lot. And I wanted to create a character that could, you know, play with those tropes and maybe turn some of them upside down. So she's, you know, it's got kind of the femme fatale as the detective, and, you know, she's sober and, you know, she likes pink and glitter. It's not all like, it's not all pinstripe suits and Tommy guns. And so I wanted to flip some of those key things around and just have fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it has actually made it really hard to market, because there isn't a lot of cyberpunk with the female protagonist, especially not written by women. And I've been told a lot of times, like when I've been asking in writers groups and that kind of thing, you know, how do I market this? And lots of people have said, well, girls don't like cyberpunk. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a girl. I like cyberpunk. Like there's got to be more of us out there. But I think that it's very much, it has been a very male dominated genre, and women participate. It's fun to cosplay. It's fun to, you know, it's a fun community to be a part of, but there hasn't been a lot of women and a lot of really significant female characters in the genre. So it's a bit of a it's a bit of a challenge to break into, but I've been, I don't know, kind of experimenting with how to get the word out and find people that might be interested in it, despite the fact that girls don't like cyberpunk.
Well, I think that's definitely not true. I mean, maybe it's just it's less well known, but I think it's diverse enough everywhere. And it used to be that I would say girls weren't as interested in action movies or video games.
For sure.
And now you have female video gamers and Twitchers, and you have action leads that are female that is really branching out, coming out in the movies. I mean, we had, for goodness sakes, yesterday I watched the latest James Bond, and the newest 007 is a black woman. I mean, talk about diversity and changing society.
Sure.
So it's just a matter of time. In the community itself, I can think of two women that I encountered when I started. One who created the Cyberpunk Hive, which was kind of a website designed to bring her love of cyberpunk to one place. I found her first on Instagram. And then the second one, Mad Queen, she likes video games in general, but it was kind of she had a YouTube channel specifically for Cyberpunk 2077, but video games in general. And she just talks about her love of video games, and sometimes she cosplays, and she's in Barcelona. So she has a very, very fun, Spanish accent.
Cool.
And the Instagrammer or the creator of Cyberpunk Hive is in the UK. So she has a British accent. So, you know, you have different countries, different places, different backgrounds. And so I definitely think there is a market out there. You just somehow need to find it. And I'm not an expert about marketing books at all.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those, like, if you build it, they will come kind of things. Field of Dreams. Like when women didn't watch a lot of action movies, it was because all of the action movies were, you know, these super macho male tough guy characters that it's fun to watch, but again, that you don't have somebody to like identify with. And I think that one of the reasons that action films have become a little more open is that we've got a lot of great female action leads, and we're starting to get movies about women that aren't just it's not just about sex. And like Charlize Theron, I think, is incredible. She's done so many amazing movies. And
I saw her in Aeon Flux. I really like that. I think that would count as cyberpunk, although I'm not sure.
I think so, yeah. Well, and the other thing is, like, I wrote this female character without thinking about it. And I just assumed that, like, you know, she's a pretty human character. I don't feel like it's a girly book, despite the fact that I play on the pink and glitter a little bit. But but I feel that, like, you know, men will be able to identify with her in some ways, too. And a lot of the majority of my readers so far have been men, and they like it. So but then I'm like, well, I'm trying to market these like pink glittery covers to men who are like, this doesn't look like it's for me. And then I don't know, it's been a challenge.
Well, but it's fun. I will admit myself, when I saw Bubbles in Space, I didn't understand what the bubbles were or the space, or there was clearly something about bubble gum, but I was like, what is going on? But you know, the first page
going
I read,
on here.
I read the first page and I was hooked. But that leads me to my next question. What is your favorite cyberpunk media? Or one
well,
of the...
Well, I mean, I always gravitate towards books. But but I think cyberpunk really lends itself well to visual mediums. And I love just exploring digital art. There's so many amazing artists out there. And TV and film, like Cowboy Bebop has been a favorite of mine. The Matrix, of course, and Ghost in the Shell. And I like these older, I mean, I haven't played Cyberpunk 2077 yet, but Human Revolution, the old Deus Ex game, I spent a lot of hours with that one too. So, but yeah, I don't know. I like it in all forms.
Okay. Yeah. I played Human Revolution to the end. I liked it, but I'm more of a first person shooter type of gamer. So
it was a bit slow. First person shooters.
Okay.
But I really liked the storyline.
Yeah. You know, the story was very interesting. And then when I got to Mankind Divided, after the first, there's the beginning part. And then after the first, I don't know, 2 hours perhaps, or 3 hours, I get stuck. I've tried to play it twice and I always get stuck where it's like too difficult, or I don't know where to go because it's unclear, and I just give up and I'm like, well, this isn't
and then
fun
you give
anymore.
Up. So that's what I often do that too. And I mean, I will shamelessly play games on the easiest setting just because like I get hooked on the story and I just want to see what happens. I don't really care if it's like, you know, I'm not into developing my skills, and I'm better at games where I get to just like smash stuff with a hammer rather than like anything that requires precision and subtlety. So I usually make my husband play games if they get too hard, just so I can see what happens.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, this one is a shooter, but have you heard of the video game Alan Wake?
I have heard of it, but I haven't played it.
I really recommend that one because you are a writer. You play a writer who is writing a book. And so he goes to the wilderness to write a book with his wife. And then his wife is kidnapped by this like darkness entity. It's like a fog or a dark mist or something. And so supernatural things start to happen where this darkness will take over bodies of humans who are living in the little town. But as he's trying to find his wife, who has been abducted, he finds pages of a book he didn't write describing what's happening in real time.
So, that sounds so cool. That's not what I was thinking of. That's something different. So now I have to look for this.
Yeah, you had definitely. It's a little bit older, but I mean, since you're a writer and you like film noir, I mean, like, he has a revolver and a flashlight. Those are your two weapons, you know, like... to mobilize the enemies, you use a flashlight and then you shoot with, you know, six shots, then you have to reload. So it's very, it feels very film noir. He's narrating things. He's wondering if he's going crazy, you know, and then he finds pages of a book that he never wrote that's describing him go to each, you know, an abandoned lumber mill or walking across a bridge and there's an abandoned shack, you know, and he finds the page describing what he's doing that he never wrote, but it's in his handwriting and it's very confusing. And for a writer, it's just, I thought it was amazing. A great story. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I also wanted to mention, when I was reading your book, but before we continue, I was reading Half of the Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. And then I switched it from that to the Harry Dresden series.
Harry Dresden, yeah.
And I feel like Bubbles Marlowe feels like a cyberpunk Harry Dresden because he does things that most functioning adults don't do. That like it, like it's to her not best interest. And it's like, come on, just get yourself together. You know, kind of like messy and doesn't shower much and doesn't sleep at all. And just pushes on because she's a good person and she needs to do what needs to be done. And so I was reading, you know, this, Harry Dresden Files. And then I read your book and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the same kind of thing with also the irreverent humor in it. It was incredible. So,
well, and like, Chandler's, Philip Marlowe, I, that's really the most compelling thing, about him to me is that he's occasionally he gets the girl and he wins the case and whatever, but somehow it never turns out quite as good as it's supposed to be, but he keeps pushing on because, like, you know, deep down inside, despite the rough exterior, he's actually just this really, you know, good ethical person. And to the point where, like, him sticking to his guns and being ethical tends to get him in more trouble than it's worth, but he sticks with it anyways. And that's something that I really admired about him. So
interesting. And so I guess that's where you got the name Bubbles Marlowe, from Philip.
Right. Marlowe. So Bubbles Marlowe was a play on Chandler's Philip Marlowe, and then Hammett, her little robot sobriety pig. Support companion is a play on Dashiell Hammett.
Okay. All right. I should have caught the, Marlowe reference cause I had just been reading it, but, I really flew over my head. I was not connecting those two things. I just happened to have it on my Kindle, and let's move forward to more current stuff. So you're a writer, and so far as I understand, you've been meeting other fellow writers like the ones we've had on the show. And one place where you could meet them was for Cyberpunk Day. Cyberpunk Day was just last Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. What did you think of it?
So I actually didn't get to participate quite as much as I would have liked to, just because I was wrapping up the final edits and stuff on book four and getting it out there. And in the weeks coming up to Cyberpunk Day, I was in crazy drafting mode. I ended up getting sick and being quite late as I got close to my deadline. So I kind of went in like head in the sand mode to get finished there. So I did submit a few articles and that for them to use. And I've been enjoying a lot of the content, now that it's been out for a little while, but I hope next year I'm going to be able to do a little bit more with it. It's such a fun idea. And I'm so excited that they're doing it and that I get to be a part of it. So.
Yeah. Well, if you have time, I wasn't that active either, to be honest, just because a lot of the things they did, well, some of the things they did were like the tabletop kind of read-throughs, and I'm personally not interested in tabletop games. I never have been, but I know that a lot of people do like it. But I really liked their roundtable discussion with, it was near the beginning, but it was with... a writer and his daughter, I believe, and the father is the host of the Cyberpunk Detectives Cafe on Facebook. which has thousands of members.
Okay. I'm in that group.
There you go. So yeah, so I was able to see what he actually looks like and his thoughts on like some cyberpunk novels and stuff. And Matthew Goodwin was there too. And so they were able to talk about some books that they really liked. And one of them, I forget who it was, said that they considered The Expanse to be cyberpunk. And I thought that was really interesting because I did not at all think that Expanse was cyberpunk. It's one of my favorite science fiction series of all time. Yeah. I haven't read the books, though. I just watched the series.
I have the first book sitting on my shelf right now, and I haven't read it yet either.
Yeah. But now that I think about it, have you seen the series?
No, I haven't. I'm saving it until after I finish the books.
Okay, so that might be some time. Yeah, season 6 I think is coming out very soon. But one of the characters, sure enough, is literally a detective, and he's an investigator, and he has even the hat, even though he lives on an asteroid belt. And he actually is a pretty important character, at least in the series. And a friend of mine said that the books are even better than the series. So now I'll have to take another look at it. Just so much to read, though.
Oh, I know. It's an endless pile.
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you was about writing Bubbles in Space, but I feel like we've kind of covered a bit of that. Your inspiration for the characters with The Big Sleep, Raymond Chandler. Mm-hmm. But I do want to ask, I mean, it makes sense you're describing how you write your book based, you know, it's your perspective. You're a woman, so it's a female lead. That makes sense. And I think a lot of people would say that you write what you know. I mean, I would probably write, if I wrote a book, it would be a male lead just because that's what I know. I don't feel like I know enough to be able to write a female lead, but I can have female characters. How did you have the voice for your robot pig? Because Hammett is so much fun. And their banter is so, I mean, like, you know, I've read other books before, like different kinds of cyberpunk books. And I just felt like her banter with her pig is just so witty and so fun and light. And like, he's an android, right? I mean, like he's a programmed robot, but yet he's able to respond a lot. And it reminded me a lot of, the companion in Blade Runner,
2049. Yeah. So I don't even know why that happened. I was telling you earlier that there's this book, it's called Grinders by C.S. Boyack. It's an indie, you know, cyberpunk detective novel. And the main character in that one is a police detective, and she has this, like electronic pet that's a cat, and they had it. I thought it was, you know, it's a good tool to have somebody to talk to when she's alone, kind of thing. And that was really, like, you know, functionally the reason that I wanted her to have a companion. And but Hammett really evolved into its own little character. Like when I decided to name it Hammett, all of a sudden I was like, well, obviously it has to be a pig. And you know, pigs are pink, and Bubbles likes pink. And it's so ridiculous. Like, as I was writing it, I was like, how could anybody even take this seriously? But I had so much fun writing them. And really, Hammett ended up being kind of this hyper logical, you know, foil to Bubbles, who is, you know, very reactive and intuitive, kind of as like an opposite kind of relationship to the way that, you know, Sherlock Holmes and Watson work, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's somebody to bounce ideas off of. And it's also just fun to play on the fact that, you know, half of the time Bubbles has no idea what she's doing, and she still manages to kind of stumble her way around just because she's so stubborn. And Hammett was just a really ended up just kind of being a balance to her craziness, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Having kind of that voice of logic, I feel like the Harry Dresden books has something like that too, with the different characters.
He's got saying, a cat, you know, too. Yeah,
he has a, well, yeah, he has a cat, but he has Bob, this head.
Oh, the skull. The, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the skull, yeah. Who tells him to do things, and then he has people that he works with that will say, or the police detective that he works with saying, you know, you really should shower, you really should sleep,
yeah, yeah,
you really should clean your place, you know. And he's like, okay,
yeah, yeah.
So, you know, like I'm reading another book of his recently, and he in it it describes how everything is totally a mess in his apartment, and he mm-hmm. finally decides to take a shower and trim his beard. And it's such a small thing, but to me, reading that, I was like, thank goodness. I'm just
thank imagining God, I know.
The smell and like everything, and you're finally taking care of yourself.
I've read those books too, and I get anxious almost sometimes when he doesn't, he's always so exhausted and he needs to sleep, and then things keep interrupting his sleep. And I mean,
yeah.
As a parent with small children, I honestly start to get anxious when he hasn't slept in so long and things keep happening. And it's like, it's very upsetting. And yeah, absolutely. The shower thing too. But
yeah. So is there any cyberpunk media that you're looking forward to that's coming out? Like, I think Cowboy Bebop, the live action, might be coming out in November. And then of course, Resurrections perhaps.
Yeah, both of those are very high on my list. And I mean, because we live in the middle of nowhere and I don't have a great internet connection, I don't get to have things like Netflix, and I can't just like download movies and whatever. So I usually end up watching things way after the fact. But I am excited for both of those. Okay. We actually, my husband and I went bought all of the Matrix, like a collection, and just like binge watched them in the last couple of weeks here. Because we're getting excited for the new one. And I didn't realize until relatively recently that they were going to do this live action Cowboy Bebop, and I'm super excited about it. I know there's some naysayers mm-hmm. out there who aren't really into it, but I don't know. I just figure you can't have too much of a good thing. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, no, I know. They're complaining that one of the characters wasn't sexy enough based on
Faye's not sexy
anime.
Enough.
Faye, that's right, Faye Valentine. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, if something to complain about, it's so silly. I mean, okay, I can kind of understand she uses her sexuality as a weapon, but you haven't even seen the series yet. She might very
exactly,
well do
like,
that. Or she might not, but that's not the most important thing of the series. You know, maybe she uses her voice, or maybe she, you know, they do it in a different way. It's
And you know, and maybe the character evolves. Like I think there's been a lot of good adaptations recently where where characters get to move a little bit outside of the confines of their original kind of archetypes, I guess. And I don't know, I'm excited to see what they do with it. I will reserve judgment until I watch it, but I'm generally kind of I like to stay positive. Like, there's really no sense in like getting upset about how bad something is going to be before you've even seen it, because then you don't enjoy yourself, you don't enjoy the anticipation, and you set yourself up for disappointment when you're watching it. And you know, maybe you end up being pleasantly surprised at the end, but you've already spent weeks or months being grumpy about it. And you know, I don't know, I don't have time for that. I'm gonna be excited, and
yeah,
if it ends up being
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, if it ends up being disappointing, then oh well, you know, worst case scenario, it's something to laugh at.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't
Matrix,
have enough time to be disappointed for things. You know, you have to be hyped because I feel like having something to look forward to is half the fun. I mean, Cyberpunk 2077 kept on being delayed.
I mean, that's why people buy lottery tickets, right?
I guess so.
Like, most people don't think they're going to win. But that moment, like before, when it's what if, like maybe, that's the exciting part.
Okay, I can see that. when you binge watched the Matrix recently, did you also watch the Animatrix that went with
yes,
it?
Yes, and I had never seen them before.
Oh my gosh! Do you remember the detective episode?
Yeah,
the black and white one.
Yeah,
totally up your alley.
Totally.
You should also watch. Well, you said that your internet isn't great where you are, but if you can find There's a little secret footage that not many people know about that was footage to go along with Matrix Reloaded, that was to go with the video game Enter the Matrix. Not the multiplayer, but the single player. So like, you know, it was a bit, now it would feel like a bit dated, but they had all these cutscenes and they filmed it with the live actors. And so if you put it all together, you get to see about 45 minutes of like secret footage that adds a bit more story to specifically Niobe and Ghost. Of things that are happening parallel to Matrix Reloaded. So I definitely recommend you watching that because the easiest thing I can mention is that if you remember the scene where Neo has to kiss Persephone in order to obtain the key, after he leaves, Niobe visits Persephone also and needs something else, and she does the same thing, and so Niobe has to kiss Persephone to get something else. And then Ghost arrives, and it's the same thing. The Ghost has to kiss her.
Yeah.
But she doesn't say the same thing. She says that Ghost has unrequited love, and he says that Niobe, I forget what she says with Niobe, but it's still like beautiful cinematography, and like it's like the exact same scene, but with different characters in a different situation, and it's a lot of fun. So you definitely ought to watch that.
Oh, I will look that up.
See what else though is happening. Yeah, I'm very excited about Cowboy Bebop. Obviously, for Matrix Resurrections, I've been posting my reactions to that and following along with that. There's someone who he posts on YouTube, but also on Twitter. Neo Matrixology is his handle, and he posts the latest things and his theories of what is going to be coming up for Resurrections. So that's very exciting. I would like to ask you my last question. What do you think is the state of the cyberpunk genre nowadays? Do you feel like it's gaining in interest, or is it decreasing in interest? Is it like already mainstream? And what do you think?
I think that what's happening is we're losing the label cyberpunk. I think that is becoming more mainstream. And cyberpunk is just getting very difficult to pin down as technology is, you know, increasingly a part of our daily lives. And a lot of modern sci-fi looks like classic cyberpunk because, you know, what was once this dystopian vision of the future has really been kind of normalized by just the huge influence that technology has on our lives. But sure. It's missing that, you know, that punk aspect really where it's no longer this counterculture thing in a lot of ways, in a lot of the ways that we see it represented, I think. But a lot of the questions that were posed by like classic cyberpunk novels and like, you know, with Gibson and Neuromancer and we still need to be talking about them. I don't know. I think we're going to see an evolution. I think it's almost becoming more important that we start defining things like, you know, what it means to be human when we have transhumanism already, becoming a reality. Right. And we need to be looking at things like the effects of, you know, income disparity and what technological poverty looks like, you know, and how, you know, what's going to happen to the world when half the world has access to, you know, so much, and then the other half has nothing. Like how there are going to be as technology becomes more powerful and less expensive, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of, you know, people who have been oppressed a little bit by, you know, by the vast gaps in income and that kind of thing. They're going to be able to fight back. And we're going to start seeing a lot of the things that we've seen in cyberpunk. And we already do in a lot of ways when we have, you know, big, corporations going down with hackers and that kind of thing. Like we're very vulnerable to because of our reliance on technology. And some of the other things we need to be thinking about are like, you know, all the various and nefarious ways that our data can be used against us. And, you know, these are all things that are even more important than ever. And cyberpunk was the genre where we used to talk about that kind of thing. But as cyberpunk becomes more mainstream, I think it gets a bit diluted, and it really, the focus becomes the aesthetic. And there are some like hardcore cyberpunkers who are all about the punk side of things. But I think, I don't know. I think that as the aesthetic kind of becomes commodified, cyberpunk itself is going to shift a little bit away from the vision that we had in the 1980s, and where that, you know, that almost becomes a parody, and the real true cyberpunk people are going to be, it's going to be a lot more about anonymity and becoming invisible. You know, the real punks are probably going to start looking a lot like, you know, your neighbor Barry the accountant. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be about fooling big data and finding new ways to be invisible in this, like, you know, hyper monitored world that we live in. So, that's kind of how I see it changing.
I thought it was very interesting. You know, I try to follow the news, and if anything happens that's kind of somewhat cyberpunk, I try to mention it. One of those things would be Elon Musk's interest in cyberpunk with his Cybertruck and whatnot, and the things that he's been doing that's been very advanced. Like, I feel like he really is leading us in certain ways. But one thing I thought was very interesting that happened in the news, I think it was last year. But before the pandemic started, so that would have been, sorry, 2019, the end of 2019, right before the pandemic started in 2020. And that was the Hong Kong revolts. We had people that were fighting against the government, wearing crossbows, protecting universities, you know, like students. Mm-hmm. And they had umbrellas to block the gas canisters that was being flung at them. And then the more interesting thing was, you know, people were trying to identify them with the cameras. And so they would take out these lasers and would just start shining all these lasers in the cameras to distort it so that the cameras couldn't identify them. And so, you know, you have this visual of, you know, dark mass chaos and smoke and colored flares and lasers and masks and all kinds of different types of masks. And I was like, this is so cyberpunk. This is exactly what we've been talking about.
And I've seen some things with like protesters and that kind of thing who want to avoid, you know, facial recognition with, you know, people being able to film them and stuff. And this kind of like guerrilla makeup that they're doing that confuses less sophisticated facial recognition software. Apparently it's not very effective for high end stuff, but some of the ways that we're finding to undermine these methods of surveillance and that kind of thing that we've almost come to take for granted. And it's not an issue until your rights are being threatened and until you need to fight back against the people who have access to that kind of power, right? So it is very interesting and kind of scary.
and do you feel like the people not at large, but just the cyberpunk community itself, because we are somewhat niche. Do you feel like they're supporting helpful community? Do you feel like they're a bit like they troll each other, or they're gatekeeping the term? What are your thoughts on the cyberpunk community itself?
You know, I think as with most communities, you really find what you put out there. And I spend a lot of time just reading in forums and that kind of thing. And of course, there is a lot of trolling, and there's a lot of like is this cyberpunk gatekeeping and girls don't like cyberpunk and whatever. Of course, there is that kind of thing. But when I have found that any time that I engage with people, genuinely and honestly, I get back what I put into it. And I have never personally had a problem with that kind of thing. If you go into any kind of situation and you're, spoiling for a fight and feel like getting defensive, you can always find that kind of thing. But in general, I think that it's been a very open and welcoming community, and they're really like most cyberpunk enthusiasts are just so they're so into it, like you can get them talking and they're just passionate about it, right? And that's I think one of the most endearing things about the community, and that it is kind of niche, and it's kind of this little community where you get to know people, and it is really a community. So I have really enjoyed my time with the cyberpunk community, and I hope that it continues that way. But I know how to just walk away if things get weird, so.
No, but I hope it continues being good, and at least you can add one more positive interaction, hopefully, with you coming on the podcast and talking on the Cyberpunk Matrix podcast. So thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on, and I really appreciate you being on.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
All right. Thanks for connecting to the Cyberpunk Matrix podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. Make sure to catch us on all of your favorite podcasts. Sites from Stitcher to Google Podcasts to Spotify and Apple Podcasts. This has been your host, Alex. Over and out.
You have just been in the cyberspace with your host, Alex. Welcome back to the desert of the real. If your upload was smooth, leave a 5-star review on iTunes and subscribe for more content.